to you in a little while about a mistake I made one time inviting you to pastor school. Let me, before I go, I'm going to talk on a mistake I made when I was a boy of not living by that kind of a schedule. And I'm going to talk to you about the young Jack Hiles and his schedule. I'm talking about way back yonder now in East Texas. But I want to read a verse for you. Don't turn to it, but I want to read a verse to you. And there'll be no notes to take for a few minutes because I'm going to talk to you about this verse for a few minutes. As the Lord commanded Moses, his servant, so did Moses command Joshua, and so did Joshua. Now get this line. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord commanded Moses. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord commanded Moses. Didn't say he didn't leave anything undone. He said left nothing undone that God commanded. In other words, everything God commanded, Joshua did. It says he left nothing undone of all that the Lord had commanded. Life is too short. Now hear me carefully. Life is too short to do everything. Nobody in this room can do all he's supposed to do. That means that since none of us can do all he's supposed to do, that means there's some things in life we have to leave undone. Show me what you leave undone, and I will tell you what kind of Christian you are. Everybody has to leave something undone. Don't show me what you've done, show me what you've left undone. Most of us leave the important things undone, because the big things never clamor for your time. Big things and big people don't. Lee Robertson's never said to me, "You never spend any time with me. I called you and couldn't get through." No, big people don't clamor for your time. And the important things in life don't clamor for your time. The little things, the pesky things that clamor and beg and plead and fight for your time. Consequently, the most important things in life must be done on purpose. You'll do the least important things, they will command you to do so. But if you do the big things, you'll do those big things on purpose. Somebody took a poll of preachers, listed the six, what they thought were the six duties of the pastorate. And they said, question one, what of these six is most important? And the most important the preachers voted for was prayer. The last thing they voted for in importance was administration. Second question was, what do you spend the most time on? List how many hours you spend a week on these six things. Number one was administration. Number six, or last, was prayer. And that's your problem. Hey, in case you would like to know it, there is a God in heaven. And in case you would like to know it, he hears prayers. In case you would like to know it, he answers prayers. And in case you would like to know it, the most important thing in your life as a man of God is your prayer time. For instance, I have a lot to do. I can't do all I'm supposed to do. I pastor a church with tens of thousands of members. 40,000 people come to this church at least once a month. I have Hammond Baptist Schools. We have a grade school and a junior high school and a high school. And we have a bus kid grade school and bus kid junior high school and high school. 1,500 students in our schools. Hiles Anderson College, we'll have anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 students enrolled on a given year, full-time and part-time. I lead those things. I preach three sermons a day, average, three sermons a day. I have 147 counseling sessions every week, average. It takes $40,000 every day of the year to keep us going. Now think about that for a minute. 40,000 times 7 is $280,000 a week. That's almost a third of $1 million that must come every week to keep this ministry going. I have to raise it. I travel 200,000 miles a year on jet planes preaching in churches and conventions across the country. I receive hundreds of pieces of mail a week. Pastors who need help call me. I'm sure I pastor 2,000 pastors. I've written 42 or 43 books. I'm busy. Now, I cannot do everything that I am supposed to do. That means I must choose what to do. Average preacher in this room spends most of your time doing things not even mentioned in this Bible. The Bible doesn't say anything about conducting funerals. Now, I do it. Not many. My associate pastor conducts most of them. Bible says nothing about conducting weddings. Bible says nothing about pastoral visits to your people. And yet the average preacher here spends most of your time doing what the Bible says nothing about, like playing God. But anyway, now, if you came to my office today, if you sat down at my desk, if you could find the desk during this week, you sat down at my desk, I could ask you to turn around and look right behind my desk and you'll find a big box of letters that high. What's in there? Unanswered mail. Don't you answer your mail? No, not all of it. Why? Because it's not listed that high on my priorities. Don't misunderstand me. I send out letters every day. But I'm talking about there are literally hundreds of letters I've never answered. Why? Because I am going to get my prayer time in. And I am going to get my Bible study time in. And I'm going to get my soul winning time in. And I'm going to get my preaching time in. I'm trying to tell you, men, the great secret to success in any area is what you leave undone. Joshua left nothing undone of all the Lord commanded. There may have been a few suggestions he left undone. There may have been a few preferences left undone. But Joshua said, of all the things I leave undone, I'm not going to leave undone what God commanded me to do. Joshua couldn't do it all. He had to leave something undone. He looked at all he had to do, checked to see if there were commandments, did everything commanded, left no commandments undone, then did all he could do of the rest and left the rest undone. Many a successful person has been a failure in life because of what he left undone. Many a good soul-winning wife has been a failure in life because she left the main thing in life of being a good wife undone. Many a successful pastor has been a failure in life because he left the wrong things undone. Many a successful husband has been a failure in life because he left the wrong things undone. Many a wonderful mother, a soul-winning young person, a popular woman speaker, a good Bible teacher has been a failure in life because they've done the things that are not commanded and left those things undone. For example, now listen carefully to me. I'm going to teach you something you never heard before in your life. Take Proverbs 31. You ladies, you love to talk about the Proverbs 31 woman. Did you know there's not a single commandment in Proverbs 31? I'm talking about Joshua left nothing undone of all that God commanded. In Proverbs 31, there are no commandments. It talks about a virtuous woman, but doesn't tell a woman what to do. But in Ephesians 5:22, it says woman, it commands a woman to submit herself to her own husband. And Ephesians 5:24, it's a commandment that says be in subjection to your own husband. And Ephesians 5:33, it's a commandment that a woman reverence her husband. Now, God commands you to submit yourself and subject yourself to your husband. I like the Ephesians 5 woman best. For Proverbs 31 just simply tells about a good virtuous woman. Ephesians 5 says, do this. Joshua said, I can't do everything I'm supposed to do, so I'm going to put the commandments on top. And ladies, you go back home and be a decent wife and put the commandments on the top of your list. Don't teach in my Bible school if you're not a submissive wife. I don't care if you're the best soul winner in your church. I don't care if you travel 565 million miles a year speaking at women's conventions. I wouldn't give a dime for you unless you obey the commandments. Yeah, ladies, they called your husbands yesterday. It's not as much fun as you thought it was, is it? Hold it, fellas. You're going to get it. Did you know there's nothing in the Bible about fathers taking their children on a vacation? Now, I'm not against it, but nothing in the Bible about it. Did you know there's nothing in the Bible that teaches that a father's supposed to take his son fishing? Did you know there's nothing in the Bible that teaches a father's supposed to take his son to a ball game? And yet these ignorant, stupid, modern psychiatrists and psychologists say, you didn't turn out good because your dad didn't take you to watch the Cubs. That's what ruined you. You take a guy to watch the Cubs, that's punishment. Now you listen, dads. You hear me well. You sit up straight and you listen to me. God never commanded you to do what the average man thinks is being a good father. I'm not against taking your kid to a ball game. I took Dave to ball games. I took Dave fishing. I took Dave soul winning. Dave and I played ball in the yard, and we played in the park together, baseball, football, basketball. And I'm for that, but God never commanded it. But God did command you to rear your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now you listen to me. It's time that you decided you're going to do what God commanded first. Now, if you can do what God commanded and take your boy to the ball game, that's fine. But if you've got to choose between the ball game, don't take pictures right now. I'll be out in the alley with my shirt off. After a while, you can take pictures in. God commanded you to get that book and teach it to your boy. And yet I'm talking to men all over this room. You never take 5 minutes a day to teach that book to your boy. Don't talk to me about being a good dad. Joshua did all of the, left nothing undone of all that God commanded. Didn't say he didn't leave anything undone. He had to leave some things undone. He was a great leader. He couldn't do all expected of him. But he said, whatever I do, I'm going to obey the commandments. That's top priority in my life. Boy, that's good. You think you're a good dad because you take your boy bowling, or take him to a ball game, or shoot a few baskets with him. You listen to me. You get that boy down and you teach that boy some character, and you teach that boy the Bible, and you get that girl down and teach that girl the Word of God. It's time that you quit deciding what being a good dad is. You've listened to a bunch of stupid psychiatrists and psychologists that ought to go to a psychiatrist and psychologist. And by the way, some of you preachers have been reading so much of that garbage that you're advising your people the same way they are. My Bible says, rear your children in the nurture and admonition of God, and that is a commandment. But you know, if you have to neglect one, put the ball down, get the Bible out. Now, I'd like for you to get the Bible and the ball. If you can't do both of them, put the ball down, get the Bible out, and do not leave undone what God commanded you to do. Did you know, I'm going to shock you here. There's nothing in the Bible about school. The God of America. Now, I'm for school. I spend a lot of my time keeping schools afloat, but nothing in the Bible about it. God never said, thou shalt send thy kids to school. But there's something in the Bible about church. I tell our Howells Anderson College professors, you go to school on Monday morning and you don't go to church on Sunday morning, you're not fit to teach in Howells Anderson College. Folks, life is a matter of priorities. I see signs, bumper stickers. My child made the honor roll, Evolution High School. I like that one, says, my child punched out your honor roll kid. Yeah. How about putting this on the bumper sticker? My child obeys his parents. How about putting this on a bumper sticker? My child honors his parents, because the Bible doesn't command your child to make the honor roll, but it commands your child to honor his mom and dad. The average person in this room is living a life leaving the commandments undone and the unnecessary of the things you do. Joshua left nothing undone of all that God commanded him. Illustration. You know, there's nothing in the Bible about macho husbands. You Arnold Schwarzeneggers. And nothing in the Bible about a domineering, bossy husband. Nothing. Before you lead your wife, she's supposed to agree to follow. And before she follows, you ought to have the ability and capability to convince her you know where you're going. You know, there's nothing in the Bible about husbands being domineering and exciting. We have a lady that sits right up here every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. She's a good lady. She's one of the best beginner workers I ever saw in my life. Has a good husband. Been members of this church for over 30 years. They got older and retired. Her husband's home all the time. He wanted her to be home with him. He asked her if she would resign her beginner department and not be beginner department superintendent any longer. I'm going to surprise you right now. And she said, I'd like to keep my department, but I'll obey what you say. Her husband, now whether he asked her the right thing or not, I don't know. That's not the issue. The issue is he asked her if she'd resign her beginner department and sit with him in church because they're now retired. She did. And I think she did the right thing. She obeyed the commandment to submit yourself to your husband. Now, if her husband told her to go get drunk, the Lord has some commandments about that, but the Lord never says, thou shalt be superintendent of the beginner department. I'm going to tell you a story. You're going to like this. There's one henpecked fellow back there with me all the way. Dr. Tom Malone pastored the same church over 40 years. At my pleading and begging him not to do so, he resigned the church and retired. Church went down and down and down and down and down, and they got to less than 200 people. One time they ran 3,000. Dr. Tom Malone is now 79 years of age. After about 10 years of being away from the church has called him back. And Dr. Malone is like a little boy with a toy. He is having the time of his life. Well, the church is so far down, Dr. Malone decided he wouldn't take any more speaking engagements for about a year or so, so he could spend his time out soul winning and get the job done. My secretary called Dr. Malone my orders, and she said, Dr. Malone, Brother Hiles wants you to speak at pastor school. Now, wait a minute. This is the biggest gathering of independent Baptists in the world. Dr. Malone said, I can't. She said, why? He said, I just can't do it. I found out later why. Because Dr. Malone had decided he was going to spend his time soul winning and not take any more engagements. And Dr. Malone, who's preached here many times, declined the invitation so he could go soul winning and talk to one person about the Savior. And I think he made a good choice. Years ago, when Dr. G.B. Vick was pastor in Detroit, he was one of my heroes. At that time, he had the largest church in America. This has been many years ago, probably 35 years ago, maybe 30 years ago. Dr. Vic had the largest church in the world. He came by, he was going through town one day, stopped to see me, just dropped in. I didn't know he was coming. I had a date that afternoon with Becky. Our daughter, who was probably 10, had a scheduled date with Becky. Dr. Malone came to my office just before I left to go be with Becky. He said, "Dr. Tiles, I need an hour of your time." I said, "Doc, I can't give it to you." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I've got an appointment." He said, "What is so important that you couldn't see me for an hour?" I said, "I don't will tell you what it is, but it's that important. And I can't see you." I was a kid preacher. I was in my 30s, and I turned down the famous Dr. G.B. Vick, pastor of the largest church in the world, to go out and have a date with Becky. God didn't command me to be a good friend to Vic. He commanded me to be a good father to Becky. Dr. Vic got upset and left. Several weeks later, I got a letter from Dr. Vic. Said, "Dear Dr. Hiles, I found out what was so important that you couldn't see me. And I was angered by it. G.B. Vic, P.S., you made the right choice." The honest, simple truth is, I have all kinds of invitations to lead the queer rights movement. Oh, not the movement, but the anti-queer rights movement. And brother, I'd like to do it. But there's no commandment in this book about it. I have choices to lead the anti-abortion battle, and God knows I hate this baby killing with a passion. It's murder. If a doctor does it, I'll be put in an electric chair, and that's solid. But I turn it down because I have no commandment. James Robinson, several years ago, was in trouble, called me on the phone. Back before he was what he is, before he changed to what he was, from what he was to what he is, and what he used to be to what he was. He said, "Dr. Tiles, I want you to come and speak. 10,000 people, Dallas Convention Center, a big rally I'm having. I'll put it on nationwide television." I said, "I can't do it." He said, "Now look, you don't preach to 10,000 people every day." I said, "No, but every Sunday I do." And he said, "I need you." I said, "I can't do it. I can't go." You say, "Why didn't you take it?" Because there's no commandment in the Bible about it. America will never go forward until America has some preachers who do not leave undone the things that God has commanded. I'll tell you a little story. Many of you have heard it. I'll give you a little outline right quickly, because I'm going to leave something undone if I don't. Follow me carefully. I'm going to talk quickly now and tell you the priorities and the schedule of the young Jack Hiles. Not the Jack Hiles now, but the young Jack Hiles. Point number one, young Jack Hiles spent 20 hours a week in prayer. So does the old Jack Hiles. That's first on my list of priorities. That's a commandment. I never walk in this pulpit on Sunday without spending 20 hours a week in the woods alone with God during the week. Never do. Number two, the young Jack Hiles had a date each week with Mrs. Hiles. She says, "Is that a commandment?" "No, but it sure was fun." And is. Number three, young Jack Hiles had a one-hour date each week with each daughter. A one-hour date each week with each daughter. Number four, the young Jack Hiles has spent at least an hour, and usually more, activities with his son Dave each week. Number five, young Jack Hiles gave every Saturday morning to his young people. Every Saturday morning, the young Jack Hiles gave to his young people. Some of that, as I told you before, was I'd organize a little junior boys softball league, and I'd be the head of it, the umpire, and I'd organize the league. I'd rush to my office and leave my office door open 3 hours every Saturday morning so my high school folks could walk in and be with me. As I said the other day, to this day, every Saturday morning, I got a bunch of high school girls come in, a bunch of high school boys come in, and we just have a time together, a lot of fun. I'm still a little high schooler. When I became a teenager, I didn't trade my childhood in. I added adolescence to my childhood. When I became an adult, I didn't trade my adolescence in for it. I added my adulthood to my adolescence. That's why I can conduct vacation Bible school and enjoy it, and kids have a great time. That's why I can preach at youth conference and enjoy it, and the kids have a great time. That's why I can get you old deadheads, and I can enjoy it while you have a miserable time. Number six, every Saturday afternoon, young Jack Hiles went home, took the car at noon, tossed the keys to Mrs. Hiles and said, "Get out of here, I'll babysit for 5 hours. Every Saturday afternoon, from noon to five, I took care of the kids, let Mrs. Hiles get out and have some time alone. Young Jack Hiles, number seven, Monday through Friday. This is before I was known. Monday through Friday, 6 o'clock to noon, prayer time and Bible time every day. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 6 o'clock in the morning till noon, prayer time and Bible time. In little country churches, I'd leave the house at 6 o'clock. I'd get up about 5:30, leave the house at 6 o'clock. I didn't require Mrs. Howes to get up. I'd come back at 7, have breakfast with her. Number eight, young Jack Hiles, Monday through Friday, went home for lunch, had lunch with Mrs. Hiles. I'm not one of these fellas, I never have been, who grabs a cinnamon roll on the way out, eats it in the car going to work. We've always sat down at the table. We've always sat down at the table. The meal time has always been a time of more than just eating. Monday through Friday, I'd go home for lunch. I'd go home for breakfast at 7 o'clock. Number 10, I went soul winning every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday from 1 to 5 in the afternoon. I went soul winning Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday from 1 to 5. It's back in the days when women obeyed their obeyed the command that said, "Stay home, take care of your kids." Now, I want to tell you something, fellas. Look at me. Don't you tell me you have a hard field till you spent 20 hours a week out soul winning in your field. Don't you talk to me about it. I don't want to hear you. I promise you, if you're sincere and clean and honest, I promise you, you can build a church anywhere in this world if you'll spend 20 hours on your face with God and 20 hours on your feet going soul winning. I promise you, you build a big church anywhere in this world. Number 12, young Jack Hiles went soul winning Tuesday night, 7 to 10, and Thursday night from 7 to 10. That's 22 hours every week. And get invitations those days to go around the country and preach. I was an unknown country preacher. Number 13 and last, I was home Monday and Friday and Saturday nights. See, we were married over 5 years before we had our first child. And even then, when I got bigger and church got bigger, I had to rearrange my schedule. I'm talking about the young Jack Hiles. I'm talking about you fellows that trying to copy the Jack Hiles of 1995. You'd be very wise to copy the Jack Hiles of 1955. So I'd go I was home every Monday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. That was my schedule. Now listen to me, and we're going to take some time to sell a book or two and go